You're listening to a recording of a live radio show on NPR News. If you want to listen to us in real time, you can stream our show live weekdays at 9 and 11 a.m. Central. Thanks for listening and enjoy the show.
Good morning, this is NPR News. I'm Chris Farrell, in today for Carrie Miller. We're going to discuss the state of bank regulation a decade after the global financial crisis. But first, let's check in on what's happening in Washington, D.C. with the political junkie, Ken Rudin. So this morning, the administration announced tariffs. 25% we applied to Chinese imports containing important technologies. And final tariff lifts will be made public, what, June 15th? And then supposedly taking effect shortly thereafter. So what's your reaction to this?
Well, this is such a Jekyll and Hyde kind of a response, approach to tariffs. First of all, the president says he's going to have these punitive tariffs against our allies, and especially, but basically he really wants to punish China because he's talked about Chinese unfair manipulation of the economy over the years. So what does he do? He takes ZTE, the telecommunications firm from China, off the list because he doesn't want to cause any economic hardship. And this, you know, this startles allies because, of course, it's still, like, for example, this 25% tariff he's instituting on automobiles.
Right.
Well, who's going to pay for that? That means Germany and Japan, two major allies. And yet, so once again, as we saw with the aluminum and steel tariffs, it's the allies. With that, it was Mexico and Canada. With the cars, it's Japan and Germany. It's the allies who pay the price. And yet, the ostensible target of tariffs, which was China, seems to be getting off the hook with its with the ZTE corporation. So, again, it's just it's confusing. It's not constant. But that is exactly look at Donald Trump and Korea and North Korea. It is not. There's no rhyme or reason to it. He
all right.
He
yeah.
Does what he does.
What is your read of this? So we're on. We're off. Maybe we're on again. So what is your read of what's going on? Because I'm hearing a lot of quotes from Art of the Deal, right? The Donald Trump book. This is the Art of the Deal.
Well, I mean, look.
A long sigh.
No, well, it was a cycle. I mean, that's a great question. But basically, the deal was about his persuasive tactics and his just, you know, brilliance that would win over the deals. Now, that may be work in New York real estate deals, but not with somebody as erratic as anybody in Kim Jong-un. So, look, the fact that Trump and Kim were sitting down and working at some kind of a negotiation is remarkable, given the fact that neither Clinton nor Bush nor Obama or anybody else, anything they've done with North Korea has worked. And so the fact that it might work with Trump, who just yet, you know, 15 minutes ago talked about fire and fury and little rocket man and World War III, and now he's talking about a deal with North Korea, and then he cancels it because he doesn't like what they said. And then he says, wait a second, it'll happen. There's no, look, he's put everybody, you know, he's thrown everybody back on their heels. Nobody seems to know what he's going to do. It has worked for him in the past. It may work with North Korea. Goodness knows nothing else has ever worked with North Korea. But when you hear some Republicans like Marco Rubio, Jeff Flake, other Republican senators who say, look, Kim will never agree to denuclearize the Korean Peninsula. So this is a pipe dream, but again, and we know that the president loves to be, it can be won over by flattery. And of course, you know, now North Korea is talking about what a nice guy Donald Trump is. Look, we'll see what happens, but there's no way to predict what's going to happen. That's for sure.
So Bloomberg columnist Al Hunt, he's a longtime Washington veteran. I think he was head of the Washington Bureau for the Wall Street Journal for a long time.
That's correct.
And he wrote this column. I just want to get your sense. It was scathing. He said, look, he now feels Kim Jong-un now appears to be shrewd. China is playing a strong hand, and U.S. allies know they can't trust Washington. Too harsh a judgment, or would you agree with this?
No, I think that's all true. I mean, basically, whenever the president has done things, and the tariffs is a perfect example, it seems like the president has undercut American allies the most, you know, Canada and Mexico and Germany and France and Great Britain. And so that we've seen that. And whereas if you criticize Russia or Putin, you know, that's obviously part of the work of the deep state government who's out to undermine his own rule. And then, of course, what he did with the reversal he did on ZTE in China. So it is, I mean, look, his supporters love the fact that he's unpredictable. He is certainly not politics as usual, to say the least. But at the same time, it just throws off dependence on the U.S. as a trustworthy and reliable ally. And nobody, you know, watching Donald Trump, you cannot say he's trustworthy and reliable, at least when it comes to relations with our allies.
All right. Now, this federal government breaking up families that come across the border, I mean, why is this an acceptable policy?
You know something? I don't completely understand if it is Trump policy or what exactly he's doing or why he's doing it. I'm not sure he's actually breaking up families, but I think from the beginning, from the time he announced his candidacy and talking about the rapists and the criminals and the drug users that Mexico sent over the borders, this is clearly what Donald Trump has always felt about immigrants. Well, actually, not always, but at least since he began his campaign in 2015, he's talked about, you know, what not the good things that immigrants bring, and but the bad things. And so the fact that he's, you know, first of all, DACA is dead. The Dreamers are not, it's not happening. Mitch McConnell has said that as well. And the fact that families are being split up, it sounds heartless, and it sounds, but I don't see the purpose of it. But again, there's a lot of things he does. I don't see the purpose of it. Just, it seems like this seems to be part of his, you know, I'm not going to even explain it anymore.
Yeah, this isn't going to go away easily, though. I think this is one of those, stories that, you know, people are now going to really start looking at and pursuing
It's a heartless policy. Yeah, it's a heartless policy that I can't imagine the American people rallying around. But at the same time, it seems like lawmakers were not about to support, you know, for example, they were not going to shut down the government to protect people, you know, in their words, you know, the Dreamers who are here. Look, let's face it, they're here illegally, whether they're their fault or not. And it's not their fault. They were brought here as children by their parents. But there are a lot of lawmakers who said, look, these people are here illegally, and I'm not going to lose any sleep, or I'm not going to be sympathetic, given the fact that there's so many people trying to get into this country legally. After all this time, after all the heartbreaking stories you hear about people losing their lives trying to get to this country, the country still seems split down the middle on the propriety and the legality of more immigrants coming to the country.
Okay, now I want to leap to another really important issue. I think this may be one of the more important legislative initiatives in recent history, which is federal criminal justice reform. And so you have the House. It voted for reform last week on a bipartisan vote. But now a number of senior senators seem to not like the House because it ignores changing federal sentencing laws. So what's the state of play here?
Well, like everything else, I mean, first of all, it's uncertain. And like everything else, people say, well, that may not happen because it's an election year. Well, it seems like it's always an election year.
Right.
But the House and Senate seem to be on different paths on almost everything. And there's just a strong feeling that you know, the fact that, for example, there's no infrastructure overhaul, which was what the president promised when he would get into office. He promised an infrastructure overhaul that Democrats and Republicans could agree on. There's no D or R way of building a bridge or saving a bridge or rebuilding the roads. So there are so many things like criminal justice overhauls that both parties are not seeing eye to eye on. And whether it comes to a vote or not, whether it comes to legislation or not, I suspect that it just won't. And I don't know, until the American people say that Congress has got to be voted out because they're not getting anything accomplished, you know, these things will keep happening. Although Republicans will say that's not true, to say nothing is being accomplished because there was a tax overhaul that many people said wouldn't happen, that didn't happen since 1986, and yet Republicans did vote for it. Did it help everybody? Did it just help corporations and the wealthy? Maybe. But the point is, something did happen. And so to say this is a do-nothing Congress might be a mistake.
So speaking of action, President Trump, last Friday, I believe it was, he overhauled the rules affecting 2 million federal workers. So if I understand it, making it easier to fire federal workers and also rolling back workplace role of their unions. How significant is this?
Well, this was the Supreme Court decision, wasn't it?
No, this was he did an executive order.
It caught me by surprise. But wasn't there also a 5-4 decision that allowed? Okay, well, let's move on. I apologize.
No, not at all. You know, there's all, you know, it's good that you might not know something because you'd seem to know everything.
Well, so, you know, something when you're on the beach and let the sun burn just, into your head.
Yeah. Okay.
But I do know that some guy named LeBron single-handedly put his team in the finals.
Yes, he did.
I know that.
Unbelievable. So very quickly, one last question. I do want you to explain something to me because this is truly an ignorant conversation. So Scott Pruitt, head of the EPA, you know, the Washington Post had a story that spent roughly $3.5 million taxpayer funds on his personal security first year in office. And that compares about 1.7 times what his predecessor spent each year. So you just look at the accumulation of stuff. How does Scott Pruitt still have a job?
Boy, that's a great question. I think the fact is he still remains a Trump supporter. President Trump supports what Pruitt is trying to do with the EPA, and that is have nothing to do with environmental protection in the EPA, which is what Scott Pruitt has done since he was Attorney General of Oklahoma. But the fact is the other stuff, not the ideological stuff, not the climate change denial and things like that, the other stuff, the soundproof phone booth, the personal sirens and motorcades when he goes to these restaurants, the fact that he's demoted people who disagree with him, that drives Trump nuts because it brings unwelcome publicity. The fact is, the problem is that with the media and the Democrats calling for Pruitt's job to be, to lose his job, Trump is not going to go along with that. He doesn't want to give in to the left and the media, things like that. But I am stunned that Scott Pruitt is still in this position, given the controversy, given the front page headlines that seem to embarrass the administration almost every day.
Well, Ken, I think that you should have a motorcade when you drive through Washington, D.C. I mean,
I do.
Oh, good. Because you've earned that. Well, thanks a lot.
As a matter of fact, yes, I do.
Well, thanks, thank Chris. You very much. Ken Rudin is the political junkie.
This was a recording of a live radio show on NPR News. To add your voice to our discussion, you can call in at 800-242-2828 or tweet Carrie at @KERRINPR. And if you miss us live, you'll find all of our shows by subscribing to this podcast. If you have questions, you can email us at talk@npr.org.